from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms.
At the legislature today, delegates debate a bill changing some water quality guidelines for the state, while senators approve a bill that guides the usage of drones. We meet the only third-party member of the West Virginia legislature, and the auditor's office is asking lawmakers for a number of bills this session. Newly elected auditor J.B. McCuskey joins us to discuss his legislative priorities coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. The House voted on a bill today that aligns West Virginia's standards for some discharges into the state's waters with federal limits. Opponents say the bill could put West Virginia's drinking water supply at risk, but supporters maintain it has the potential to attract new industry to the state. Liz McCormick reports on the debate over the bill today.
House Bill 2506 is a complicated and technical bill, but in a nutshell, it relates to how much of a substance can be released into West Virginia's waterways under state permits and the places where those permits overlap. Essentially, it allows an increased discharge limit of cancer-causing and non-cancer-causing chemicals into West Virginia's streams and rivers, but only after certain calculations and observations have been made by the State Department of Environmental Protection. The DEP would decide if a new facility that planned to apply for a discharge permit could be built in an area close to other already permitted facilities. Those against the bill say it would lower the quality of the state's drinking water and be harmful to citizens. Supporters of the bill argue it would bring more jobs to the state because organizations could build more facilities on vacant industrial properties. Delegate Roger Hanshaw of Clay County is the vice chair of the House Judiciary Committee. He explained the bill to members of the chamber.
The bill does not permit facilities to do anything that is out of compliance with the law. The bill does not allow facilities to discharge materials that aren't authorized today. The bill doesn't allow individuals or entities or permit holders to discharge anything above and beyond the existing West Virginia water quality standards. The bill has no relation whatsoever to catastrophic incidents.
One of those catastrophic incidents Hanshaw was referring to is the January 9, 2014 Freedom Industry chemical leak in the Kanawha Valley. Hanshaw pointed out that the event was an accident at a facility that was not permitted to discharge into the Elk River outside of Charleston, and the bill would not change that. Democratic delegate Barbara Evans Fleshour disagreed with Hanshaw's assessment.
Those of us who are in the legislature and the 300,000 other people who lost their water for up to a month, it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with that because we know how precious our drinking water is. We know it. It's been proven. I do not want us to be guinea pigs on lowering the water measurements so that we have the potential for more contamination.
Delegate Mark Zatezalo is a Republican from Hancock County and the lead sponsor of the bill. He noted in his floor speech that he wasn't sure how many jobs it would attract, but the potential was there.
We're in competition. We need tax base. We need to do things that we haven't done for a while. It's going to be a very difficult job. It's going to be a lot of hard work, and we all need to be engaged. This is just a small thing. But it's an important thing, and I do not, if I believed that it was going to harm the water quality of the state of West Virginia, I would be against it. I think this is a good bill, and I think it is the way for us to go.
Democratic delegate Mike Pushkin of Kanawha County suggested there were other opportunities for the state to attract businesses.
I, for one, think it's time that we just stop, you know, believing this tired old lie that the only thing we're good enough for here in West Virginia, the only kind of jobs we can attract in West Virginia, the only kind of economic development that we can have in West Virginia, the only kind of growth that we deserve here will be at the expense of our citizens' health, at the expense of our citizens' safety, at the expense of something as essential as the water that's flowing from their tap.
Pushkin encouraged his fellow lawmakers to look for ways to use the state's waterways as an economic driver by way of tourism. Another Democrat, Delegate Sean Fluharty from Ohio County, opposed the bill.
Here's what we've been sold for decades. Decades after decades. Doesn't matter who's in power, Republican, Democratic, whatsoever. We've been told, just trust us. Just trust us. We don't need coal mine safety. Then a tragedy happens. Just trust us. We don't need workers' rights. Then a tragedy happens. And on this bill today, we've been sold, just trust us. The water will remain clean and the jobs will come raining down.
In his closing remarks, Delegate Hanshaw encouraged lawmakers to separate fact from fiction.
The most important thing in the practice of science is to divorce it from emotion. Because when we let emotion creep into any decision, we cloud our judgment and we ignore facts. Beware the shoehorn. Mr. Speaker, this bill doesn't change water quality standards. This bill gives DEP the ability to do what it's doing now in conformity with the law, and it makes West Virginia compatible with our neighboring states.
House Bill 2506 passed 63-37. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Since 1900, there have been only four members of the West Virginia Legislature that weren't either a Democrat or Republican. In 1915, there were three members from the Fusion Party, and in 1927, one member of the Square Deal Party. This year, a fifth delegate has been added to that list. Delegate Rupi Phillips is from Logan County. He's now the only member of the West Virginia Legislature registered as an independent. Delegate, thanks so much for being here tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Initially registered as a Democrat, you decided to change your affiliation this year. Why'd you make that decision?
Well, you know, it was real easy just seeing what the outcome of the general election was on the federal level. You know, Trump won Logan County by 79.9%. That is a huge victory in Logan County. And just hearing people talk, seeing the comments on social media, and then probably the one thing that turned me more than anything is on the third presidential debate, Donald Trump put Hillary Clinton on the spot on a 38 and a half week abortion, you know, a dismemberment abortion. Mm. And she didn't flinch. It was just like looking into a black hole. And that really sunk hard and ate at my heart. And you know, I've got a little 7-year-old girl, and I just thank the world of her, and I just couldn't imagine at 38 and a half weeks old something happening to her.
Delegate, a lot about national politics has changed. Do you feel like your state party has changed as well? Excuse me, your previous state party.
Well, you know, if you look at it, to go word for word on the state Democrat platform, I've been told it's one of the most left platforms in the country. And the Southern West Virginia Democrats, as Harry Keith White told me one time, Southern Democrats are conservative, Bible-thumping, God-fearing, gun-toting Democrats. And you know, I feel the national party and the state party has left that style of Democrats. They're not for the working Democrats now, and that really irked me, and I just had to make a move.
Do you see a reflection of that change in your constituents, in your district?
Well, you know, it's funny. Right after I switched, I went to the county clerk and I asked him, I said, John, can you get me the count? The next day he called me and he told me the count was 4505. I said, John, what was it 2 years ago? He said, somewhere in the 400 range.
The number of registered independents.
Yeah, I mean, and that's 10 times. I mean, that's tremendous. And I'd say if you go today and look, I will say it's probably up around close to 4,700.
So how, as the only independent member, how do you get your priorities through to the parties in the House of Delegates?
Well, you know, it's my seventh year, and I've always been bipartisan. I can work on both sides of the aisle, and, you know, in my real job, I'm a salesman, so you get along with people, and I can sell what I need to sell.
Tell me about those priorities. I think you often get called the coal delegate over at the State House.
Well, you know, being from Southern West Virginia, Logan County, we are a coal county. My district is coal. We depend on coal. So I've come over here with basically three things on my mind, and that's God, coal, and guns. And that's been my platform from day one, and I'm not going to change my platform to appease anybody.
Where do you go from here? How do you make sure that your voice is heard over at the State House?
Well, you know, the third bill to roll across the chamber floor was my bill. It was an increase of litter penalties. Mm-hmm. And I think that's tremendous to be an independent lead sponsor on a bill, and it's the third one to come across. I was very proud of that.
Now, the budget is obviously going to be the biggest bill to come out of the State House this year. Where do you stand on tax increases and reducing the size of government?
Well, I'm not much for increasing taxes. Definitely, I think we've got a lot of play to do some budget cuts. But I also believe we're going to have to do some type of taxing. If it's a three-year sunset, whatever we do, maybe in 3 years look at property tax reductions, maybe even personal income tax reductions on something. But we got to make a move somewhere. But let me say this. I know there's a lot of gripe on the chamber floor about get a budget bill out. Well, you know, this is my seventh year, and 4 years of it was under Democrat control, and the last three's been under Republican control. Not one time has a budget bill ever been presented at the beginning of session. It's always at the last part of session, because you've got bills coming through that's got physical notes on. Could be positive or could be negative. So how can you do a budget when you don't know what you're going to end up spending?
Mm-hmm. You wait till those bills come through, and then you put that budget together.
Absolutely.
Independent Delegate Rupi Phillips,
thank you so much.
Senators approved several pieces of legislation today. They voted to progress a bill to allow Sunday hunting on private property with the owner's permission. They approved legislation that prohibits the Public Service Commission from regulating internet-based phone systems. And senators voted in favor of a bill that regulates the usage of drones in the state, a bill that sparked quite a few questions from members on the floor. Senate Bill 9 creates guidelines for the private and commercial use of drones or unmanned aircrafts in West Virginia. The bill says drones cannot be flown within 100 feet of someone else's home, says you cannot take video or still images on someone else's property without their express permission, and requires law enforcement to get a warrant before using a drone in an investigation. There are exceptions for police officers, though, that allow them to use drones for public safety and search and rescue purposes. The bill also prohibits the taking of photos and video on industrial sites, like at a coal mine, a natural gas processing facility, or a power plant. Although Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump explained on the floor there is an exception to the provision.
We recognized in trying to craft this piece of legislation with some balance and circumspection that there are times, perhaps, when a designated industrial facility or the owner of it wouldn't want, for reasons that aren't in the public interest, wouldn't want a drone over that property.
Media outlets, according to Trump, who obtain a license from the Federal Aviation Administration, receive a number of exemptions under the bill to protect the freedom of the press. Senators, however, were interested in how personal usage of the drones would be affected by the legislation, like Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso.
I have a picture in my office of my hometown. It has 800 residents. If I take a picture of the entire town, do I have to get permission from every one of those residents?
If you had a camera and you took that picture, there's no expectation of privacy there. You're shooting the buildings, the streets, the traffic, the people. People have no expectation of privacy when they're out and about like that. But if someone were to, and I know the senator from Marion wouldn't do it, but if someone were to fly a drone, you know, up to someone's bedroom window and take pictures from the outside of, you know, inside the house, then that there is an expectation of privacy there.
Privacy was also a concern for Preston County Senator Dave Seipold, who questioned what recourse citizens might have under the bill if they feel their privacy is being invaded.
If I'm at my home and somebody is flying a UAV within 100 feet of my home and they're harassing me or whatever, do I need to call the sheriff's office and report this? Can I capture the drone? Am I in violation of the law if I capture it? You know, what's my remedy for that?
Don't mention shooting. Okay. There's nothing in the bill that specifically prohibits you from capturing the drone.
The bill does create a number of misdemeanor offenses for violating various areas of the law, including harassment or operating a drone while under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Fashioning a weapon to a drone would be a felony. All three offenses are punishable with fines and jail time. We meet three more members of the 83rd West Virginia Legislature tonight, this time from Southern West Virginia, in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Mark Maynard was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2014 to represent the 6th Senatorial District. A Republican, he is from Wayne County. Senator Maynard chairs the Committees on Natural Resources and Enrolled Bills and serves as the vice chair of the Committee on Economic Development. Justin Markham is a Democrat from Mingo County. He represents the state's 20th House of Delegates District. Delegate Markham was first appointed to a seat in 2012 and won election that year. Markham is an attorney and serves as an assistant prosecutor in Mingo County. Mark Deem was elected in 2016 to represent the 21st House of Delegates District. From Mingo County, Deem is a Republican. He works as a school administrator. This is his first time holding public office.
We continue meeting the state's newly elected constitutional officers this evening. J.B. McCuskey was elected state auditor in November and took office in January. From Charleston, McCuskey is a former member of the House of Delegates. Mr. Auditor, thanks so much for being here this evening.
Thanks for having me, Ashton. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about some of the legislation that your office is pushing through the legislature this year, or I should say they're asking the legislature to help with this year. House Bill 2475 has already been introduced. Tell us about what that bill does.
So it's what would be sort of a debt collection or an interception bill. And so essentially what it says is if somebody owes the state money and then we in turn owe them money for a service rendered, we can, instead of paying them the money, we can divert the revenue that was going to go to them into the general revenue.
Why do that now?
Well, I mean, the obvious is that we have a giant budget deficit, but we should have been always probably doing this, right? I mean, I think this is the right thing to do regardless of how our state's budget is.
OASIS is in the process of phasing in. It's a very complicated thing, but it's essentially the computer operating system for the state of West Virginia. You are, you're drafting a piece of legislation right now that has to do with the way employees are paid through this system. Can you explain that bill to us?
Sure. So OASIS has required over the last 4 years prior to my getting there, essentially, that people be paid on a biweekly system. And the code of the state of West Virginia delineates multiple ways in which people in different agencies need to be paid, and none of them are biweekly. And so in order for us to finish the last phase of phase three, to get OASIS finally completed, we need to change the code a little bit so that we're not outside of the law when we put people on a biweekly pay system.
And I'm sorry, but you spoke with the House Finance Committee today. Does it seem like this is a piece of legislation that they're going to be able to go for?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's about getting OASIS finished. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, this is actually pretty minor code cleanup. And so if we're serious about finishing this thing and stopping the money flying out the door into the consultants' hands, it's something that needs to get done.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more, this transition to OASIS, because it was a major part of the campaign as well, part of that discussion. And, you know, something you told me in one of the interviews that we did during the campaign was that you wanted it finished, that you wanted it to get done. You all have changed some of the employees who are now overseeing this system right now. Can you talk to me about the transition a little bit?
Sure. So the first thing that we did when we got there is really just sink our teeth into what was happening, what needed to get done, and how could we get the project moving again. It got put on pause about 2 years ago or maybe 18 months ago. And I hired a special assistant, one of the two people that I've hired, to come on, and he was actually going to replace my finance director because he was retiring. And as it turned out, we lost the project manager at OASIS. And so instead of hiring a new person at a $100,000 salary at OASIS, my new finance director is splitting time between the house, between my office and OASIS. So one wonderful thing there is it's a little bit of savings for the state both and in OASIS. But he's also somebody who understands the way organizations should be run. And he has helped me and the other members, the treasurer and the governor, should get great credit for this too. We've worked very, very well together, the three of us, in getting this project moving. But we've set very, very hard deadlines. And in the last ERP meeting, we set end of fiscal year 18 as the end of the project. That is when this will all be implemented and it'll be finalized. And we're all working towards that goal now. Because what we found is nobody had asked the question, what does done look like? It was really sort of fascinating. I would go into these meetings and they'd say, what do you contemplate when the project's over? And they're like, well, we never really thought about what it would look like when it was done. And so what we've done is started getting to done, which is an important first step. And I'm very, very confident that fiscal year 18 will be the end of this project and we'll move on to the next phase of what we need to do.
I understand that you've only been in the office for a short time, but do you see any challenges or roadblocks in place right now that might prevent you from getting to that July 1 end date?
I mean, just government bureaucracy in general is a big roadblock. But right now, no. The Treasurer's Office and the Governor's Office, specifically Jason Pizzitel and Josh Stowers, have been really stepped up to the plate. And if the three of us can continue to work the way that we have been, I feel very confident that we're going to hit our goals.
Now, the Auditor's Office can sometimes be a difficult office to understand for people on the outside, but it has a lot to do with the way that money flows through state government. You're working on a bill that would essentially put some things into place in case there's a government shutdown, dealing with your office and with the treasurer. Can you talk about that, Bill?
Sure. I mean, and so what's interesting here is that the treasurer and I are the only two constitutional offices who can essentially go to jail in the event of a government shutdown if we were to pay a bill that maybe wasn't supposed to be. And so what this bill does is it changes some of the penalties that can be levied against us if we were to act in some way outside of the realm of what was supposed to happen in a government shutdown. Nobody really knows what's supposed to happen. And so, you know, I'm not worried about getting punished electorally if I do something wrong, but it seems as though, particularly in these very uncertain waters, that potentially a jail sentence might be a little excessive.
A new constitutional officer, and of course you've been in the House of Delegates, so some people probably recognize you and recognize your face, but you're a new statewide officer. For the people of West Virginia, you know, what are your goals as auditor?
Well, so when I got in there, it was very an odd thing to go from being an employee to being in charge, right? And so I have 161 employees, and I sort of broke it down into two separate things. First, I wanted small goals that I could accomplish quickly, and I wanted big, long-term goals that had to do with the overall office. And so the three things I wanted to get done in my first year: finish OASIS, get our transparency website going, and lastly, to improve the audit functionality of our office to make sure it was smoother and less expensive for the cities and counties. And honestly, in the first 6 weeks, I couldn't be happier as to how far we've come along on all of our short-term goals. I feel really good. My staff has been awesome. And things are really humming in our office. And then on the longer term goals, what we really want to do is number one, work with our office to sort of turn it into a fraud fighting agency, right? Somebody who's really looking after the way that the state money is being spent and finding the things that are being done improperly. And secondly, just doing our part to make our office a little smaller and a little less expensive, because, you know, this isn't really going to be a governor's thing or a legislative thing, right? This is an everybody working together thing. Because, you know, I get really frustrated when I see the way that people argue about the budget. It's so binary. It doesn't need to be cut this complete program in order to save money. We need to start thinking about how we provide the same services for less. And so that's what I'm working with my staff to do, to try to reduce our staff, but provide the same services. And everybody's been really wonderful. And when we've asked people to step up to do a little bit more, it's been welcomed with open arms.
West Virginia State Auditor J.B. McCuskey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ashton. I appreciate it.
Tomorrow on our show, Governor Jim Justice has presented lawmakers with a second pathway to close a nearly $500 million budget gap. His Revenue Secretary Dave Hardy joins us to discuss that alternative plan and what the governor's new tax increases mean for West Virginia families. And remember, you can watch the legislature today at the Legislature at Work live every day on the West Virginia Channel. Tune in at 11 a.m. to watch the House and Senate floor sessions or catch them as they're rebroadcast each evening at 7. Those are also available streaming online at wvpublic.org. For now, this has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.